Lately, I've had a question run through my mind, a question I cannot free myself of or answer adequately. The question is, why do we come to church? Why do we spend so much time and energy putting on this weekly service? Reverend Victoria Weinstein, a Unitarian minister in Massachusetts, answers this way. They, meaning those who come to church, particularly visitors, they come seeking God or community or religious education for their children. They come hesitant or full of hope, their expectations shaped by previous experiences in religious communities or by television sitcoms or movies featuring kind-hearted clergymen and eccentric but loving parishioners they think they would like to know. They come wounded or utterly confident. They come full of fantasy and full of projections. They come as shoppers, she says, seeking a product that will meet their inchoate longings and their practical needs. If the church does not feel right, does not sound right, does not smell right, or does not speak to them, they will go elsewhere. It never occurs to the vast majority of them that the church does not exist to meet their needs, that it is they who exist to fulfill the promise of their own human potential and to enter into relationship with God for the purpose of being transformed by that encounter. It never occurs to many of them that by venturing through the door of a church, they are actually responding to a call to do with a faith community what they cannot do for themselves. That is, to discern God's highest purpose for their lives and to devote their lives, heart, mind, soul, and strength to that purpose. I invite you to translate that last bit if you prefer to leave God out of the equation. We come to church to discern the purpose in our lives. And we come to figure out how to devote our life, our hearts, our mind, our soul, and our strength to that purpose. That might include the, quote, practice in becoming human that is sometimes spoken of as the reason for church. There seems to be some part of us that wants to be, that yearns to be the best person we can, that wants to live a fulfilling life. But we need encouragement and company to do it in the best way. We need examples and occasionally exhortation and maybe a spiritual buddy. You know, like you have a workout with a workout buddy. You promise to meet them there. You encourage them as they motivate you. You challenge each other and make suggestions about how to spice up your workouts, even when you can't be there together all the time. We are each other's spiritual companions, whether we realize it or not. We live out our lives as examples to each other, whether we know it or not. And we encourage each other to make our lives meaningful just by being here. Thank you. Reverend Weinstein continues, the visitor must be willing, ready and able to join the regulars along the demanding path of discipleship and service. It never occurs to any of them that it is not really the denominational television ads that have brought them together, or the manicured lawns and colorful banner unfurled out front, or the rainbow flag that heralds a welcome to sexual minorities, or the clever sermon title that has been printed in the weekly newspaper. It is the living God, the magnificent, unnameable intensity that has drawn together, yet again, a ragtag group of individuals with the intention of making them a people. That's us. And of leading them out of the wilderness they vaguely intuit they are wandering in toward a more meaningful, conscious, and fully realized life. They are being called into covenantal relationship with God and with each other. We are not here for reasons that serve ourselves, Vicky says, but to serve each other. When Beacon's board searched this summer for its annual theme, they stepped right into this very sentiment. Tend and befriend, they said, especially when seen as applying outwardly as well as inwardly, captures this very meaning of church. But what does it mean to be in this kind of relationship, a covenantal relationship? Covenants are promises. What do we promise each other in this congregation? And again, I will refer you to the back of the order of service, that one that you don't have today. I know it's interesting that we have it every week, but this week. It states that we promise to welcome each other as we would wish to be welcomed, to treat each other with respect, and to honor each other's spiritual journey. These are not magic or classic words, merely one person's attempt at articulating how we might like to live together. But let's look at some of the classic ones. If you look in your hymnal, numbers 471, 472, and 473 are commonly recited amongst our congregations. We'll read together number 473. It's a very well-used one. Read with me. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. You can see there are all these three are various ways of saying much the same thing. One of the ways we dwell together is to support our religious community financially. I do use the word religious intentionally because we are a religious institution, a specific organization with the intent of doing church together in all of the connotations that might have for us. Earlier we heard Beacon's mission statement. That is what we do together and covenant or promise each other. You probably know that we are now in the midst of our annual canvas. For our budgeting purposes, we need to have a good idea of how much each of you is willing and able to pledge. There's that idea of promise again. To the work of our congregation. So we ask you, in person or by phone, we are giving you the opportunity to be generous, to give of yourself and your wealth to this good community we all hold dear. The word generous comes from the Latin, meaning noble or magnanimous. According to the compact Oxford English Dictionary, generosity means giving freely more than is necessary or expected, or being kind toward one another. Generosity is now a topic of sociological research. Research on specifics such as the sources, origins, and causes of generosity. The manifestations and expressions of generosity, and the consequences of being generous for both donors and recipients, now are being conducted by the University of Notre Dame. Generosity is good for you, it appears. It leads to happiness, and it has a biological basis. A neuroeconomist from Claremont Graduate University in California has been studying the effect of the hormone oxytocin generosity. In a study he conducted, there was an 80% increase in generosity after the administration of oxytocin compared to the saline placebo. They got it by squirting it up your nose. Oxytocin! Right. Oxytocin is released naturally, though, when one becomes emotional about something, whether it's someone you connect to personally, like the homeless guy on the street, or the image on TV in front of you. So when you come to both an understanding of another's plight and become emotionally involved, you make a larger contribution of kindness, whether in person or by proxy through your checkbook. This article was published in Psychology Today only last fall. But I'm sure we can name television advertisers who have known this intuitively if not through research, for some time and have used it much. Generosity is also contagious. A study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences had participants play a game made up to test their willingness to give money away. The more they played the game with people who gave their money away, the more likely they themselves were to be generous. We humans are impressionable and social creatures. The author James Fowler comments, "When people benefit from kindness, they pay it forward by helping others who were not originally involved. And this creates a cascade of cooperation that influences dozens more in their social networks." Generosity is, as we know, a learned behavior and attitude. Religious institutions make it a point to teach children and adults alike about not only the duty, but the benefits of gain from caring about others. Humans seem to have dual and conflicting natures, though. There's the greedy part of us, too. We need to be encouraged to be generous, to transcend our selfish side. Indeed, generosity is a spiritual discipline, like running or meditation. It takes perseverance to continue with it day after day, paycheck after paycheck. It is challenging to continually think about the greater good instead of ourselves and our immediate day-to-day concerns. We often don't get that right away benefit of being generous. Doing so requires that you have faith enough that you will be able to earn sufficient money to live on, and that others will be generous to you should you require some kindness yourself. Generosity, especially to people you do not know, demonstrates that you value everyone, not just those with whom you have personal ties. Most of all, perhaps, generosity allows you to express your gratitude for the gifts you have been given and the money you have been able to earn. Our story for all ages is a parable told by Jesus, a story often told to encourage generosity. Certainly, it is true that her gift of one of her only two tiny coins was a gift that loomed larger than any of the gifts that any of us give to be given. I must admit, I assume that none of us gives half of our wealth. But because you subscribe to our covenant, you are generous, and I thank you for that. Reverend Weinstein reminds us that there is a consumer mentality all around us, a mindset that expects inspiration to be provided externally, a mindset that wants to watch instead of contributing to. If you are a consumer rather than a promise maker, sooner or later, you will leave. Dissatisfaction is inevitable. Consumers expect a lot. They expect that things will always go the way they want them. Covenant makers work together to find the common ground, the way forward together. We do not often speak about how much of our treasure would make us generous people. The idea of a tithe, a tenth of our income, seems to have been forgotten amongst Unitarians, left behind with our previous religious or affiliations, perhaps. But it is slowly making a comeback among us, as we recognize that, one, as a group, we are better off than most, even in our privileged culture here. And two, most of us could afford to be more generous. Many of us would not notice much at all if we increased our pledge by a full 10%. Would I miss $20 a month? Probably not. It's mostly a matter of whether I decide I want to do so. It's a matter of how much I care about Beacon's future. All of us are grateful indeed for the generosity shown to Beacon. Without it, we could not begin to address our mission. Each of us makes our contribution as we are moved to do so, as well as we are able to do so. It is our concrete response to both the emotional bond and the rationally understood need to support the budget. When we started sharing the plate 3 years ago, we discovered that we were indeed capable of giving more. Where there used to be only coins in the baskets with a few envelopes, now I see there are many $5 bills amongst the envelopes and checks. When we opened our hearts to another organization, first Kokomo Youth Services, then the Hope for Freedom Society, and now the Elizabeth Fry Society, we found we more than doubled the amount of unidentified contributions. We did not lose when we started giving away. I want to share with you a story from California. Unitarian Universalists Andrew and Scylla tell their story of what they gained by tithing. Yes, they who live in the high rent district of Greater San Francisco give away 10% of their income. They say they accomplished it gradually, starting with $100 a month, and over a few years increased their giving to both church and other charities until it reached 10%. As Andrew puts it, we did it for two reasons. Because we can. And because it brings us such joy that we can be philanthropists. We know our efforts help the world. Scylla adds, for us, tithing hasn't just been about opening our wallets. It has also opened our hearts. I wonder how open our hearts are. I wonder if we are willing to open our hearts even more.